Welcome to Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. It's the podcast series that's uplifting and real and gives you the truth bombs that you can handle while talking parenthood. Spawned from a desire to know more, while also wishing that someone who had done it all before had shared their stories, each episode we talk about something true and something real. This mama here, along with my guest hosts each episode, don't tell lies. So if you're a parent, want to be a parent, but just appreciate a giggle, strap yourself in for the ride and let's do it. On this episode, welcome to Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. On today's episode, we are going to speak to someone who's a very, very dear friend of mine. And we've known each other for longer than we have been with our respective partners and children. Kerry Turner is a professional journalist, has been on the radio for a really, really long time, which has seen her go from Adelaide to Ballarat to Melbourne and now back to Adelaide, where she has started a beautiful family. Kerry is a mother of two children, beautiful Piper and Beau. And welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chloe. Welcome to Adelaide.
Thank you. So one of the reasons why I wanted to have Kerry on Mama Doesn't Tell Lies is you had a really challenging time falling pregnant. You met your partner, then now husband, Mark, and knew that you wanted to have a family.
Absolutely.
One of the best things I've ever been to, my first ever surprise wedding, which Kerry will remember forever for the crazy sobbing friend.
The squeal and the sobs, I will never forget.
And that part of that was because you wanted to just get a move on and start a family. So the first question every time we do this is, what is the one thing that you wish someone had tapped you on the shoulder and said, let me just give you a piece of advice if you're going into this parenthood thing and tell you this that other people don't talk about?
For me, I wish someone had told me how hard breastfeeding was and how much it hurts. Mm-hmm. It's so painful. I remember looking at my husband in the days after Piper was born and saying, Mark, I can't do it. I can't do this. It hurt. I was like clenching up every time just in that anticipation for that first attachment, just that it was going to absolutely murder my nipples, basically. Mm. And it was so sore. You get past that, and I'm glad that I did and I persevered. But no one told me. Mm-mm. It's just meant to be this natural thing that you just know how to do and you can just do it, but you have to learn it. And it's such a difficult thing to learn. And every midwife is telling you a different way of going about it. And if there was some consistent information from every midwife, that would have made my journey initially so much easier.
And midwives love to almost guilt you into, well, you're just doing it wrong, I found with some, but then some have a beautiful soft touch to say, oh, no, take it like the hamburger. Make sure that they're doing the hamburger and they're feeding this way.
I kept getting told nose to nipple, nose to nipple. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I need to get the nipple in her mouth, not in her nose. What's going on?
And the one they kept saying to me, it's breastfeeding, not nipple feeding.
Oh, yes, I've had that one a few times.
I have a friend, Steph, who says one day she's going to write a book called Breastfeeding. It's F-U-C-K-E-D because she really struggled
it's
and she
tough.
Was so she felt so guilty that it didn't come naturally to her, and she had that insane guilt around, well, if I don't breastfeed my baby, I'm not a good enough mum.
Oh, and I wish that would
consistent across everything with parenting.
That needs to go as well, that whole, you know, breast is best. As long as your baby's being fed, let's be honest.
If they're growing healthily,
I was lucky. I could feed once I got through the initial pain. Mm. But, gosh, as long as they're fed,
totally,
who cares?
Totally. So let's start from the beginning. So you and Mark got married and decided you wanted to start a family.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go as planned initially.
No, it
was not as easy as some people hope and expect it to be.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. You do expect that you spend so many years doing everything you can not to fall pregnant, and then when you're ready to fall pregnant, you just think it will happen, and it didn't.
And what was your first reaction to that? So how long do you try before you actually seek help
We tried probably for a bit over 6 months. My GP had said to me, don't wait too long. You know, if you're under 30, we would say give it 12 months. But if you're over 30, which we were, then after 6 months, if nothing's happening, then let's get some tests and things checked out. So a bit over 6 months, and we started to reassess where things were going to be heading for us, and went to an information session at a fertility clinic. And a few things that they said that night resonated with me, and I thought, we need to get some tests done through these guys. So we did, and initially thought we would take the path of less invasive treatment, and that didn't work for us.
And how long did you try that for?
We did two rounds of that. And of course, with fertility treatment, for people that aren't familiar, you need to give yourself, if it doesn't work, you need to have a month off to get you let your body have a cycle and then go again. So we gave it two goes, so that was over 4 months. So that's nearly another half of a year gone. And I just started to think, nah, this is, I'm getting older, my next birthday's fast approaching, I think we need to look at IVF. And I spoke to our specialist and she said, I'm not going to push that on you, but that's certainly our next step.
And so you go down the IVF path, and one of our listeners has reached out and she said she did IVF and was confronted by the fertility centre and, you know, the looks of other mums, the hopelessness, but the anger, the sitting in the waiting room of the IVF clinic or whatever it may be. Her anxiety really grew around it because all of a sudden she's like, oh my gosh, this is, there's so much pressure I'm putting on myself. Did you feel any of that?
I didn't. I felt up until that point like I had failed as a woman, but also as a wife. I couldn't fall pregnant naturally, and, you know, why would Mark want to be with me, essentially?
Which is incredibly confronting when you're putting so much pressure on yourself. And we've talked about that in the episode with Deborah about the pressure you feel to seek perfection as a parent or as someone trying to get pregnant, or, you know, in our everyday lives, particularly as women, we are so judgmental on ourselves, more so than men, I think.
Absolutely.
And was he sharing those sentiments at all?
And I have learned over the years to communicate much better with my husband than I have ever done before. And I did tell Mark my thoughts and my feelings, and he, oh, you're creating that in your head, Kerry. You're making all of that up. So once I could get past that, to me, my daily visits to the IVF's clinic to get my bloods tested and come back in 3 days and we'll do it again, and we're checking levels, and just I was a pincushion, basically. And so for me, that was, my eye was well on the prize big time. I'm like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. It's not me. We discovered that I had PCOS, which polycystic ovaries, if people aren't familiar with that, which I'd never had diagnosed, did not know.
I think it's 1 in 10 women, because I also have it and was diagnosed early, but I also had the, I had the shock of learning at 23 and going, well, you'll probably never have children.
Wow.
And dealing with that, going into relationships with a very understanding husband who said, well, if it's not, if it doesn't work for us, then so be it. And we were very, very lucky that we got pregnant the first time, which is also a hard thing to tell someone when you know that someone has been trying for a long time to have a baby to even talk about. So you get to the stages of IVF and you're becoming a pincushion. How were your hormones at that point in time?
Oh, wow. I was on a drug called Clomid and it sent me a little bit crazy. Just not crazy, but just... I felt like my fuse was very short and
irrational.
It did take, it didn't take much to push my buttons and tip me over the edge. So, I was pumping myself with hormones. I was injecting at home every night the different hormones. And even that, you know, initially I said to Mark, there's no way I can do this to myself. You know, you walk into a clinic and a nurse does it. I can't do this at home. And so he said, I'll do it for you. And I remember the first night of the drugs, lying on the bed, had the ice pack to numb the area, And I'm like, would you just hurry up? This is like, and it was then a bit of anxiety of, I thought, no, I need to do this myself because I know when it's about to pierce my skin. And I was just lying there clenching my bit of tummy fat that he had to squish this needle into. I'm like, hurry up, just get this done. And
I can only imagine that it's like that second that you know when you've been for a Brazilian when they've put the hot wax on and you know that they're about to pull the hair and you're just laying there, you're like, just do it. I know the wax isn't ready, but just do it. So obviously to generalise and make light of a very challenging situation. So how far along did you go in IVF before Piper was a thing?
Well, once we got told, okay, your levels are good, we're going in for egg collection, I was told that 6 to 8 eggs at harvest would be a fabulous result. Mm. And when you wake up out of anaesthetic, there may be a nurse there. If there's not, don't worry. We will write on the back of your hand how many eggs we collected so that you don't have to be looking for a nurse to find out. You can just look at your hand and see. Wow. So I came to and a little bit groggy. There was no one near me. So I had a look at the back of my hand and I saw a 1 and a 6.
Oh my gosh.
So I got double the egg collection that they had told me would be a fabulous result. So I had 16 eggs pulled out of me. Yeah. Of those 16, 11 fertilised and got put in, we did one transfer straight up and that was unsuccessful. So we then waited a month, as you have to do, and then went back and got one out of the freezer. Defrosted it and it took, and so that was our little Piper.
Wow.
So it was a full 12 months of fertility treatment, but it was worth it.
Totally. So you've got beautiful daughter Piper comes into the world. The first few months for you were pretty challenging. I remember texting you and you were like, I haven't washed my hair in 5 weeks. I'm not sleeping. I'm not coping. And you were really forthcoming with reaching out and being like, please help me, which a lot of women aren't.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the things that has spawned this podcast is my own personal experience with postnatal anxiety and finding my people to speak to it about.
Mm.
So you've wished for this baby for so long and then you have a less than ideal situation, which is totally normal.
My introduction to parenthood was rough. Mm. I have always been very headstrong and I can do it and nothing can stop me. And then suddenly I didn't know what I was doing. Mm. I had no control. And this baby was demand feeding and it was exhausting. Mm. And she wasn't sleeping unless it was on my chest or on Mark's chest. And we'd think, great, she's asleep now. And we'd lower her onto her back from our chest and her eyes would ping open because that warmth from chest to chest was gone. And we're like, no, go back to sleep. Mm. It was like this whirlwind of, oh my goodness, what have we done?
Mm-hmm.
And how, we don't know what we're doing. We have got no idea. For me, mother's group didn't start until Piper was 16 weeks old. Mm. So, you know, that's a long time.
That's too long. Before
mother's group finally told me, yep, your session starts in November. I mean, she was born in August.
Yeah, it's a really long time. Because if nothing else, mother's group gives you that outlet for those people who are going through the same thing, even though you're trying not to compare each other in mother's group.
Yes.
But at the same time, you're like, am I batshit crazy or is this a thing? And they're like, oh, my God, I thought I was the only one.
Oh, my baby did that last week. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Okay. Yeah. But we didn't have that for the first 16 weeks. So it was hard and looking back, I didn't speak to Mark as much as I should have.
Yeah.
But I also, again, it's that failure thing. I can't do this. I'm not made to be a mum. Mm. We
and
got through it.
And being such a headstrong, independent, fabulous superhuman that you are.
Learning to ask for help was hard, really hard. And I think that's maybe why I reached, because I spent so long interstate, I'd moved back home but felt like my core friends were interstate. I'd left them behind.
Yeah.
So I was here back home in Adelaide. Great, I'm home. Mum's around the corner. But I didn't have that friendship group. And the friends I did have here had their babies. They were done with it. They had kids in kindy ready to start school.
That's what happens when you're from Adelaide compared to Melbourne. Nothing against anyone from Adelaide. But it's kind of that country town mentality that you have your kids young and, you know, us busy amazing, successful, independent women like to leave it into our 30s. Yeah.
And I met Mark later in life. Had I met him when I was 22, well, then I probably would have had my babies earlier. But I met him when I was 28. So, it took a bit of time to get my head around it all and learn that it was okay to have sausages every night for a week. That was the biggest advice my mum gave me. She's like, doesn't matter as long as you eat.
Yeah. I will never forget when Hamish was probably maybe 8 weeks old and someone turned up to my house with chicken risotto and they'd brought a tub that was big enough to last like 4 days.
Amazing.
And it literally tasted like the greatest food I've ever eaten in my whole life. I'm like, I don't need Vudamond. I have got chicken risotto from Tracy McCallum that is going to last me for 4 days.
Is that not the best gift to give a new mum?
Totally.
Meals for the
don't
freezer.
Don't worry about kids' food. Like kids' clothes. Like they grow out of them too quickly and it's only becoming a mum that I've changed what I give new parents.
Yes.
I give them something for them.
Yeah.
And whether it be a bottle of grog.
Yes.
To have, I think I bought you a bottle of Piper when Piper was born to celebrate when you finally get that chance to have a drink together.
Yes.
And some food.
Yeah.
And I made a rule that unless you're bringing booze or food to my house, don't come to see my child.
Don't bother. Yep.
Because I'm like, I'm like, I love it, but clothes are cheap. And
that's right.
I can send someone
up to the supermarket.
And they're
just going to vomit or poo on them. So
totally.
Yeah. Don't spend lots of money.
So we then fast forward. So you've gotten through a pretty challenging introduction to parenthood. It did get easier though.
It did. Piper learnt to sleep through the night, which was probably the biggest turning point for us. Bit of tough love. My husband could see I was at breaking point, so Mark said, for goodness sake, go to bed, shut the door, I've got her tonight. You know, do not get up to her once.
Which is incredibly hard when you've got that mother's instinct to hear a crying baby and you're
No. But I obviously was that exhausted that I don't remember hearing her. That
amazing.
Night. I don't remember it. And
it's amazing what the mind does, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, like, switches off for you.
And knowing, I think, that Mark did have it and I trusted him completely. He's a fabulous dad. So I slept and woke up the next day feeling great and we turned a corner with Piper sleeping and that night of tough love, just cry it out, sweetheart, sorry. You just, you know, we'll keep checking on you, but you will not get picked up. We will not be getting you out of that cot. And that helped. The second she started sleeping, my days got easier. They were still challenging at times, but they weren't as full on.
And you, that's probably another thing that is something that's almost taboo is the whole crying it out thing because people don't talk about it because they're scared that people will think they're bad parents, but I don't think...
We had to.
Yeah, totally. You've got to do what works for you because, Christ, I remember the days when we did it with Hamish and he just wouldn't settle and he was a catnapper during the day and we were very fortunate. He's a really good sleeper now and he was from 10 weeks, but we were disciplined from the get-go to get to that with the, you know, you set your watch for 5 minutes and then you go back in after that and then you make it 10 minutes and then you make it 15 and it feels like the longest 5 minutes of your entire life that first time you make that decision because it goes against all your natural motherly instincts to leave a crying child.
Yes.
But you just got to let it go.
But when they also stop crying the second they hear that door handle turn, you know they're playing you.
That's exactly right. Oh, they're so smart. They get us from it's like from the moment they're conceived, they just have us
that's
in this
right.
like worry state where we drop everything for our children. And I don't know if that ever goes. My mum will attest to it that you never can fully switch off once you're a parent.
Yeah.
So I want to divert. So you've got a child, everything, the life routine gets going. You've got a really amazing job. So you've been a professional news journalist in the radio industry for a really long time now.
19 years.
Oh, my gosh.
19
but you're only like,
years.
You're so
I'm
young.
Only 21,
That's
I know.
Exactly right. So we met in radio. Radio is a wonderful, wonderful medium. But
I love it.
It is relentlessly unforgiving and you give your all.
You're married to the job.
Yeah, and there is very little flexibility because it is a position of fortune and there is a little bit of a, it's the joke, you never go on holidays when you're in radio because you'll get replaced.
Yes.
So you go back to a job and the boss says to you, if you want to come back to work, you've got to work 5 days.
Yeah, essentially I explained that I would like to explore a part-time option. knowing that it was unlikely. We did reach an agreement initially, and so for the first 12 weeks, as I eased myself back into life at work, it was a part-time arrangement. Mm. But, yeah, when you're on air, it's really hard to be part-time. There's that consistency required for the product, for the listeners, and so I had a huge decision to make, but I love it so much. So how could I walk away from it?
Totally.
And it's hard. Mm. It is really hard, but... Yeah, after that 12 weeks of part-time, I was straight back into it and it was big.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah.
But before you know it, you're back into the swing of things and you just do it. You just do it and you love it and you break stories and you work right up until the news theme starts and flick your mic on and off you go. You just do it.
And you've had some really big days on the job. I remember when you were telling me about, like, the bushfires. Mm. And whenever there's a really big story, I always think about you and what you're doing in the newsroom that day, because your day can get completely derailed by a major event.
Yeah.
Which means that you aren't home to feed the kids.
Yeah.
Or you have to do what the job requires because you are the qualified person on the job. Kind of.
That's
almost
right.
Not that you're in the emergency services, but it is a outlet to communicate to the community.
Yes,
what's going on.
That's right.
So how do you handle that as a parent, knowing that in the back of your mind you're going, okay, I've got pickups to do, I need to reorganize that, or I need to do this or this. Can you switch off and you go, if you're anything like me, there's work Chloe and then there's mum Chloe.
Yeah,
and name till the two shall meet.
Yes, and poor Mark has met both of them.
Mm.
And I think he probably would prefer mum Kerry.
Yeah.
Because work Kerry can be a little intense, but when those things happen, and most recently for me it was Christchurch.
Yeah,
that day was huge.
Mm.
I got into work, normal day, and then my first news update is at 1 o'clock, and at 12:30 all hell broke loose. Mm. And Christchurch was in lockdown, and there were reports of a gunman and there were reports of deaths, and we didn't know anything except the real basics.
Mm.
And as that afternoon went on and more information came out and the number of people dead started to rise, and it was huge.
Mm.
And the call was made that we will do an extended coverage tonight. And my first thought was, oh, it's Friday night. Okay, I'm not going home at 6 o'clock. It was only an hour of extra coverage in the end, but I have a husband who just rolls with it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he's cruisy. He's just takes it in his stride. So when I text and said, I'm sorry, extended coverage, so I'm not going to be home before the kids go to bed, we just do it.
I think
it's not every day.
Yeah,
it's not every
you're
week.
You're lucky that you've got a supportive husband. Mm. And a very understanding husband. And I too, I feel like we've both sort of hit the jackpot with the fathers of our children, because there are people who don't have that good fortune to have a, oh, daddy, can you fix this?
Yes.
In their life. We're talking to a couple of mums who have done it on their own in the future as well about that. But so you've transitioned back into full-time work and you feel like you're back to your normal self?
I did, yeah, pretty much, because Piper was a great sleeper and she was loving being at childcare, so that helped too.
Mm. So 5 days of care?
Yeah. Full-time childcare. Initially, you do have that doubt in your mind too of what if she hates it and I'm dropping her at this place every morning because I have to go to work. That's how selfish is that? And there's so many different thoughts that go through your mind. But I could see she was thriving, loved to learn things and still loves to learn things, and really connected with the educators there. So that made it easier on me, knowing that I'd done an okay thing. And I want to set a good example for her.
Mm.
You know, you can be a mum, you can be a working mum, if you want to be.
So the one thing, and this is probably my own struggle as well, because I work 4 days, but do have to often work more than that just because of the nature of the business I'm in, when I'm not doing this amazing podcast, in that I sometimes have this pang of my, oh my God, these people are seeing my child more than I get to see him.
Mm.
And I know I'm not alone in that feeling, but it's something where you're like, I know as a kid, even being in maternity leave, Matt was like, you get to see milestones that I don't get to see firsthand.
Mm.
And you do have to kind of make your peace with that a little bit, which has probably been the biggest challenge recently with changing my son's childcare And seeing him not happy when he first got there, I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm so selfish. What have I done? I've moved him from a place he's been since he was 9 months old to 2.5, and he knows everyone. His best friends were there and his educators have been there. And now he's miserable because I wanted a more convenient place close to home. Mm. And that sat with me for about a month, and it made me feel really uncomfortable and also selfish. But, you know, it's kind of the modern dilemma.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought, I worked so hard for my career to get to where I was at. Why do I need to throw it away? Mm. Okay, yes, it's going to be tough having to adjust to full-time work and be a full-time mum and be a full-time chef and cleaner and
wife.
Everything. Yep.
Doggy mum.
Yeah, that's right.
As Lola sits on the floor next to us.
Snoring.
I like to remind myself that Beyonce has the same amount of hours in a day and she's also a parent. And so I'm like, okay, if Beyonce can do it, then we can do it too. Yes, she has a lot of help. But she probably doesn't see her kids that much either.
Yeah, that's true. And I must admit, going back to work, once I got into the swing of things, I could see, this probably will sound terrible, I'm a better mum
mm-hmm.
for the time I have away from them.
Mm-hmm.
The time, if I'm home with them 24/7, I run out of things to do with them. Mm-hmm. I can't keep them stimulated and engaged in activities and
totally.
Thinking of things without it being forking out more money.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a much better mum to both of them because the time I have with them is so precious now.
It's quality over quantity.
Yeah, it really is. And I have mentioned that to some girls and they look at me a bit like, you're mad. Why did you have kids then? I'm like, no. It's not that I don't love them. I adore both of my children, but I am a better mum to them. My fuse isn't as short. I'm not snapping at them. We're not getting sick of each other. You know, when all I have to do is have a couple of sick days home and I'm like, okay, Piper, we're not friends today.
Yeah.
You need your space, I need mine.
Yeah, it's the parent-child as opposed to the peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
So you have mentioned there is baby number two.
Yes.
So before we wrap up, you decided after a couple of years of having a wonderful little child that there was room in your life for one more.
Mm, yes.
And what did you have to do?
Well, we went back to the fertility clinic because mm-hmm. we had embryos in the freezer.
11 of them that had taken. Yeah. So
had some to play with.
Yeah. You've got the Brady Bunch ready to go.
That's right. And so we went back to start the process. Piper was about 18 months at that stage and discovered that I had issues with my thyroid. So we had to get those levels right. So that delayed things a little bit. In hindsight, it was the best thing that could have happened because once we did have Beau, I said to Mark, I cannot imagine having had a shorter time, age gap between the two of them. Mm. It ended up being just over 2.5 years age gap. That was challenging enough.
Yeah.
Had it all happened when we initially went back, I possibly would be locked up in a self-care place because yeah, it was full on. It's a game changer bringing number two in. I won't lie about that, that's for sure. It is a total game changer, but you just have to roll with it and adjust things. But it was full on.
It's so frightening as a parent of one who potentially wants another one, let's be honest. It's just a bit frightening because life does start to come back to a set, not a sense of calm because it's never calm with children, but I have so much admiration for people who have four kids, six kids. But I kind
of deserve a medal.
I know. I feel like maybe once you've gotten past two, anything's easy. From what I've heard, that the third does make it easier. Now you're not planning on having a third.
No.
How quickly did you take to get Beau?
First go. Once my thyroid level got sorted, we started the injections at home again and did a transfer. The day we got to the clinic, they said, look, the embryo we took out this morning was not viable. So we've taken another out and that's defrosted and looks fabulous, looks really healthy, really good looking embryo. They show you a photo of it and you just go, okay, cool. Looks very scientific, but okay, if you say it looks good. And so, there we were with Mark and Piper by my side. It was rather an odd way to conceive our second child with big sister in the room, but
I'm sure there's people out there that had their second child conceived while there was a child in the room and had nothing to do with IVF.
Yeah, that's true.
Those people who I'm looking at who have got a second child and their baby's still sleeping in the cot at the end of their bed.
Wow.
I definitely feel there may have been some presence
yes.
there.
Yes.
So now you've got two beautiful children.
Yeah.
A wonderful husband, a beautiful dog, and a great home here in Adelaide. What's the one piece of advice that you would now pass on, having gone through the IVF journey and also the return to work journey? What is there one thing that you could pass on to parents to be, or someone listening who is in the middle of or about to go to work? What is it?
Be really good with your time, with the return to work, like time management. Thankfully, I'm a bit of a list writer and organisation freak. So that helped, but even then I feel like I'm out of control at times. So.
But your career has been built around being exactly on time, because the news does not happen at 7 minutes past the hour. No. It is on the hour.
Oh, there's a few jocks that don't time out all that well, but yeah, generally, it's so you've been tight really, deadlines.
Yeah, you've always lived
and
that
regimented
life. And
I thrive for
life.
That. I really thrive for that. So I've had to learn to just let go. Mm-hmm. As far as home life goes, just embrace it. Okay, if the carpets aren't vacuumed for a week and a half, because your little girl has said, "Mummy, can you read books with me?" Then read books with her. Mm. Just sit down. That's time you'll never get back. So the carpets can go another few days. I've
just
had
get
to
the
really.
Cleaner. Mark, if you're listening, get a cleaner.
We don't have a cleaner. But yeah, certainly for me, I've just had to learn to embrace it and love the chaos. It is chaos. You know, going from zero children to one was big. Going from one to two was bigger for me. Just sharing my life with an extra person, which has been amazing, but just exhausting. Just you do not stop.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. And Kerry, much like myself, us workaholic mums, has a side hustle. And is a...
I'm mad.
You're mad. I love it because you're mad. KT Weddings, as a wedding celebrant, if you're in Adelaide or Melbourne or somewhere else...
I'll travel.
Yeah, we'll put the link up to Kerry's website on the podcast episode details today. It has been an absolute pleasure. A friend of mine for about 15 years, I think it is
easily,
now.
Easily.
And thank you for being on Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. And good luck with today's wedding.
Thank you.
You have to go and make another two people very happy, and then they're probably going to listen to this and go, shit, did we really want children?
She's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. So more episodes on the way, but thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Chloe.
You've been listening to Mama Doesn't Tell Lies, the podcast sharing nothing but realness about parenting and kiddlywinks. Produced and hosted by me, Chloe Jeffers. Audio editing and production by Alice Miller. True stories by those willing to share.